Indonesia shouldn't exist. Not like this. 17,000 islands scattered across the equator, perched on one of the most violent collision zones on Earth. Born from a drowned continent, raised by volcanoes that still burn. By every law of nature, this should be a shattered wasteland. But somehow, it's the opposite. A place of staggering beauty and life lived on the edge of destruction. Turquoise waters, emerald peaks, temples in the clouds. Through fire, flood, and ash, people stayed and carved paradise from the impossible. To understand what Indonesia has become, we have to understand how close it came to never existing at all. This was once Sundaland, a vast tropical landmass now buried beneath the sea. When the glaciers melted, the ocean rose 300 feet. What you see of the islands of Indonesia today are simply the peaks of drowned mountains, the last remnants of a lost continent. But the Earth was not finished. The Ring of Fire burns its signature across this archipelago. 130 active volcanoes breathe smoke into Indonesian skies, more than any nation on Earth. They are not just mountains here. They are gods, creators, destroyers, and the beating heart of everything that follows. Mount Tambora once screamed so loudly it plunged the world into winter, bringing famine to Europe and turning American skies blood red. Lake Toba, what appears as a peaceful mountain lake, is actually the throat of a supervolcano that nearly ended human existence 74,000 years ago. Its eruption was 1,000 times more powerful than Mount St. Helens, reducing the entire human population to perhaps 10,000 souls. And what's stopping it from happening again? Well, nothing really. That's the paradox of Indonesia, a civilization built on borrowed time, thriving in defiance of everything that says it shouldn't. At Bledekuwu, the earth itself bleeds. Mud volcanoes bubble and hiss across a lunar landscape, spitting ancient sediments from depths where the ocean floor becomes molten rock. Here, the ground moves without earthquakes, breathing with pressures from the planet's core. It is creation in slow motion, new land birthing itself from the deep, one bubble at a time. Yet from this endless destruction, impossibilities emerged. The Wakatobi atolls rose from the deep like ancient crowns, their coral ramparts built on the graves of submerged mountains. Here, sea nomads learned to read the language of currents and tides, their entire civilization balanced on islands that exist only because the Earth chose to destroy itself and start again. On the island of Flores, evolution went rogue. Cut off by shifting seas, this fragment of land became a biological anomaly, a place where nature broke its own rules. Here, dragons learned to hunt in packs. Real dragons. 3-meter-long Komodo monitors with venom that thins blood and bacteria that rots flesh. Apex predators evolved in isolation, immune to the usual limits of size and survival. In a cave not far from the dragon's territory, scientists unearthed tiny skeletons of an extinct human species, just 3 feet tall, with chimp-sized brains. Homo floresiensis. A find so bizarre, it rewrote the human family tree. But Flores wasn't finished with impossibilities. 3 lakes crown Mount Kelamutu, each a different, impossible colour. Turquoise, emerald, blood red. They shift their hues without warning, as if the mountain dreams in liquid. Science speaks of minerals and acidity, but standing before them, you understand why the locals see the souls of the dead changing their moods in those waters. At Belitung, granite boulders the size of houses lie scattered like dice thrown by giants. These stones, older than the dinosaurs, are evidence of continents torn apart and reassembled. This is Indonesia's foundation, built on violence shaped by catastrophe, made beautiful by forces that should have made it uninhabitable. Every sunrise here is borrowed time. Every beach a temporary truce between the ocean and the fire below. The very ground trembles with the memory of its own destruction. But the real mystery isn't how this land survived. It's what the first humans did when they arrived. Instead of running from the chaos, they did something that still baffles archaeologists today. Most civilizations built their sacred sites in the safest places possible, protected valleys, stable ground, far from danger. Indonesia's ancient architects did the exact opposite. Where volcanoes spat fire, they carved temples. Where the earth cracked open, they built monuments. Ancient people didn't flee from Indonesia's geological fury. They made it the foundation of the divine. It began not with bricks or altars, but with light and pigment in the dark. Deep in the caves of Sulawesi, 45,000 years ago, humans created the oldest known figurative art on Earth. they painted their myths onto stone. Not stick figures, but intricate scenes of half-human hunters chasing wild pigs and buffalo. But the ancient artists didn't stop with cave walls. In Barda Valley, stone giants lie strewn across the highlands, some standing upright, others half buried as if caught mid-emergence. No one knows who carved them, or when, or why. Their faces are worn smooth by time, their bodies tilted like they're listening to something underground. Are they ancestors? Gods? Warnings? In Benna Village on Flores, megalithic altars still anchor a community that has remained unchanged for centuries. Stone platforms hold ceremonies older than written history, while traditional houses with towering thatched roofs cluster around them like prayers made of wood and grass. On the southwest coast of Bali, Tanah Lot Temple sits atop a rock formation jutting into the sea. It's accessible only at low tide, when the waves retreat just long enough to reveal a narrow footpath. Built in the 16th century by the Hindu priest Deng Hiang Nirartha, the temple is dedicated to the god of the sea. During high tide, the temple becomes completely surrounded by water, appearing to float on the ocean. West Java holds perhaps the most controversial mystery of all. Megalithic terraces climb a hillside in geometric precision that challenges everything we know about prehistoric Indonesia. This is Gunung Padang, where some archaeologists believe structures could be 20,000 years old, making them older than Stonehenge, older than the pyramids, older than civilization itself. ...7,000 feet above sea level, ancient architects defied every rational argument for human settlement. Here on the Dieng Plateau, sulfur pools bubble and steam rises from volcanic vents. An acidic green lake glows with unnatural colour. Its waters too toxic for life, yet somehow beautiful in their menace. In this landscape so hostile it seems otherworldly, they built temples that seem to float between earth and heaven. Yet craters could open beneath them at any moment. The scale of Borobudur defies comprehension. 2 million stone blocks, each carved by hand, and hauled up volcanic slopes without machinery. ...75 years of continuous construction across three generations of families. Over 2,600 relief panels telling the story of enlightenment. 504 individual Buddha statues watching over the land, all built while Mount Merapi smouldered on the horizon, ready to erase their life's work with a single eruption. Yet no one really knows who built it or why. There are no inscriptions, no records, no king claiming credit for this colossal achievement. The monument was abandoned sometime between 928 and 1006 and lay hidden for centuries under volcanic ash and jungle growth. Its disappearance is documented by nature, not by history. Today, thousands of lanterns rise from its terraces during Vaisak Day, turning the ancient mystery into a beacon of light. The mystery remains, but the wonder endures. Not far away, Prambanan's Hindu spires reach toward the stars. Built around the same time as Borobudur, the two monuments represent different faiths rising side by side from the same volcanic soil. The temples face Mount Merapi directly, the most active volcano in Java, their builders choosing to worship the colossal mountain that has erupted over 60 times in recorded history. Death itself became architecture in South Sulawesi. The Toraja people carved tombs directly into limestone cliffs, placing wooden effigies called Tau Tau to watch over the dead from balconies carved in stone. Here, the boundary between the living and the dead becomes another work of art, another way of making the impossible landscape sacred. What you just witnessed sounds like ancient history, doesn't it? Sacred builders from a forgotten age. But walk through Indonesia today and you'll discover something extraordinary. The ancient world is still very much alive. Life in Indonesia has always begun at the water's edge. Not just rivers and rain, but tides, currents, and rhythms passed down for generations. In Nusa Penida and Sabu, seaweed farmers stretch ropes between bamboo poles at low tide. On Java and Sulawesi, shrimp ponds pulse with the moon. Fishermen launch dugout canoes before sunrise, guided not by GPS, but by clouds and wind. This is knowledge shaped by repetition, not written down, but lived, day after day, tide after tide. On the island of Sumba, the village of Ratangaro sits just above the surf. It's known for its tall, pointed thatched roofs, some of the highest in Indonesia. Beneath them, families live much as their ancestors did, surrounded by megalithic stone tombs that have stood here for hundreds of years. In the highlands of Flores, Wairebo sits alone on a mountain ridge, reachable only by a steep 3-hour hike through the forest. There's no road, no cell signal, just a circle of seven conical houses and a small community that has kept its way of life intact for generations. Visitors are welcomed, but on local terms. The balance here between people, land, and tradition isn't put on for show. It's just how life works when you're this far from modern noise. And in Jodapan, a riverside village in Java once known for flooding and poverty, things look different now. The houses have been painted in bright colours, turning narrow alleyways into open-air murals. It started as a clean-up campaign, but it became something more. A sign that pride and place can evolve without losing their roots. Not all of Indonesia's timeless places are hidden in remote mountains. Just off Lombok's coast, the Gili Islands offer a different kind of escape from the modern world, one that thousands of tourists discover every year. No cars rumble down these sandy paths. No motorbikes weave through crowds. The only sounds are bicycle bells, horse cart wheels, and waves lapping against pristine shores. On Gili Trawangan, Gili Air, and Gili Meno, the pace slows to island time. Visitors' biggest decision is whether to snorkel with sea turtles or watch the sunset from a beachside swing. It's not ancient tradition that preserves this simplicity. It's a deliberate choice to keep things unhurried, uncomplicated, and utterly peaceful. Even the art here hides underwater, where dozens of life-size statues rest on the ocean floor around Gili Meno, waiting to be discovered by those who dive beneath the surface. Across Indonesia, these villages offer more than a glimpse of the past. They live it, quietly shaping the present through rhythm, architecture, and community. Take their relationship with the land. You'd think volcanic soil would be barren, poisoned by centuries of ash and sulfur. Instead, it's so fertile that rice grows here like nowhere else on Earth. As the sun rises over Bali, nearly 500,000 people take to the fields. In villages across the island, they wade into emerald terraces that cascade down volcanic slopes like liquid jade. Thousands of families beginning the same ritual their great-grandparents knew by heart. The Subak system awakens with the island. Water flowing through ancient stone channels. Temple bells marking the rhythm of planting season. Communities moving as one body with 1,000 years of memory. In one terrace, three generations work side by side. No ceremony, no instruction. Just the quiet logic of repetition. Hands plant in perfect rhythm. Feet follow paths they've walked since childhood. Even the youngest know what to do, not because they were taught, but because they've watched. Season after season, harvest after harvest. They work barefoot in flooded terraces from dawn to dusk, backs bent, hands aching, legs sunk deep in volcanic mud. And yet, the smiles come easily. Not from comfort, but from alignment. Because here, to work the land is to belong to it. Not for ambition, not for escape, but for the quiet certainty that what you do today has been done for 1,000 years and will be done again tomorrow. But not everyone gets to work the volcanic soil. Some must descend into its fiery source. At Kawa Ijen in East Java, the earth splits open to reveal something that shouldn't exist on this planet. Blue flames dance in the darkness, not the orange fire of wood or gas, but electric blue tongues that flicker like captured lightning. This is sulfur burning at temperatures hot enough to melt copper, creating a lake of acid so concentrated it could dissolve metal. The crater walls weep yellow crystals, and the air itself becomes visible as toxic clouds that drift like ghosts through an alien landscape. It looks like a window into another world, a place where the rules of chemistry bend toward impossibility. You'd expect this to be a place of death. Toxic air, acid lakes, temperatures that melt metal. And yet, men descend into this hellscape each dawn, not from choice, but from the kind of necessity that transforms the impossible into the inevitable. Sulfur miners wrap wet cloth around their faces and navigate by the light of burning poison, harvesting blocks that weigh more than their bodies can comfortably carry. The same gases that would kill most visitors within minutes become their daily atmosphere. They've turned an alien world into a workplace, finding in extremity a form of purpose that renders questions of safety almost quaint. Their backs bent under impossible loads, they climb out of the crater like figures from myth, yellow chunks balanced in woven baskets, transforming the Earth's fury into something their families can hold, sell, and survive on. But toxic craters are just the beginning. For millions of Indonesians, the impossible is simply routine. In South Kalimantan, entire communities drift just above the water on stilts and pontoons, their homes shifting with each current. Markets happen by boat, neighbours pass by canoe. And when monsoon rains swell the rivers overnight, entire villages must be re-tied, relocated, or rebuilt. On Bunjan Island, one of the most densely populated places on Earth, Families expand their coral village stone by stone into open water. There's no room to retreat, only to keep building forward into the sea. On the slopes of active volcanoes, villages cling to mountainsides where pyroclastic flows once race downhill. The mountain's moods, its steam colour, ground vibration and bird silence become a language everyone must learn. In Jakarta, Indonesia's sprawling capital, the city sinks up to 25 centimetres per year in some areas. One of the fastest sinking cities on Earth. Parts of North Jakarta have already dropped 4 metres below sea level, yet 10 million people continue their daily routines in a metropolis that's slowly disappearing beneath the Java Sea. Across the archipelago, this balance between life and instability plays out again and again. And on the far western tip of Indonesia, in a place called Aceh, the sea once looked so calm. Fishermen launched their boats. Children played near the shore. But these villages live with the water. They don't control it. All this wisdom, all these traditions, all this careful balance between humans and geological fury, it was about to face its ultimate test. It was the morning of December 26, 2004. The ocean vanished, exposing coral, fish, and silence. And then it returned with the weight of history. A wall of water shredded the coastline. Boats landed on rooftops. Towns were erased like footprints in sand. Over 200,000 lives lost, nearly half of them in Indonesia. It was the deadliest natural disaster of the 21st century. But it wasn't the end. The Earth did not rest. In 2010, Mount Merapi exploded in its most violent eruption in over a century. Fire chased villages down volcanic slopes. Ash blanketed entire towns. But this time, the warnings worked. Hundreds died, but thousands more escaped. Then came Sinabung, a mountain asleep for centuries, suddenly wide awake and angry. Not one eruption, but dozens. Weeks became months. Months became years. Villages emptied mid-meal, mosques and schools left behind intact, but silent. The disaster wasn't a moment. It was an unravelling. And still, the rhythm continued. Palu, Lombok, Krakatoa, Java, Sulawesi, Sumatra, tsunamis without warning, earthquakes at night. One after another, not as outliers, but as a drumbeat. A decade not of singular tragedy, but of relentless transformation. But then, something happened that no one predicted. Not silence, not ruin, but a boom. Logic says people should have learned to stay away from Indonesia after the disaster decade. Instead, they started coming in record numbers. Tourism exploded. Cities expanded. Temples welcomed more pilgrims than ever before. Surfers, seekers, investors, and artists flooded in, drawn not in spite of the chaos, but because of how it was overcome. From the ashes of disaster, a new kind of magnetism emerged. And nowhere captured that unlikely rebirth more vividly than Bali. Today's Bali is Indonesia's masterpiece, a place where all the forces we've witnessed across the archipelago converge into something extraordinary. Mount Agung rises like a sacred axis through eastern Bali, its slopes dotted with temples that have worshipped the volcano for over 1,000 years. At Pura Besaki, Bali's mother temple, pilgrims climb ancient stone steps while tour buses navigate the same winding roads, both drawn to terraces carved from ancient lava flows. Higher up the slopes, Pura Lempuyang's Gates of Heaven frame the volcanic peak in perfect symmetry, creating one of Bali's most photographed views, though visitors often wait hours for the shot, while priests conduct daily ceremonies just meters away. At Pura Pasar Agung, built directly into the mountainside, devotees leave offerings at shrines that face the crater itself. A peak that erupted as recently as 2017, raining ash on these same temples. Ancient worship has become modern tourism, both drawn to the same dangerous peak. Across the island, waterfalls have become theatres where ancient rituals play alongside modern wonder. At Sekumpul, Bali's most dramatic cascade, morning ceremonies honour water spirits while photographers wait for perfect light. Hidden Tukad Chepung draws spelunkers and pilgrims alike, its cave entrance revealing divine light shafts that have inspired both temple art and Instagram feeds. Gitgit Falls flows through a sacred forest where purification ceremonies happen, steps away from viewpoints designed for selfies. At Tegenungan Falls, wedding parties and ritual bathers share the plunge pools, while Nungnung's thundering cascade attracts both waterfall chasers and ceremony participants. Rhythms are everywhere in Bali. In Ubud's town square, the Kecak fire dance circles nightly, dozens of shirtless men chanting in hypnotic unison, while tourists lean forward with cameras. At the Sacred Monkey Forest, macaques seem to understand their role as mystical gatekeepers, blessing visitors with encounters that range from blessing to pickpocketing. Traditional and touristic blur into something uniquely Balinese. Even the island's world-famous surf breaks tell the story. Waves generated by tectonic forces crash over volcanic reefs, creating swells that draw surfers from every continent. The same geological instability that makes Indonesia dangerous creates some of the planet's most perfect waves. Modern Bali has become a living demonstration of Indonesia's genius, turning what could destroy you into what sustains you. The volcanic soil grows the rice that feeds both gods and tourists. The spiritual practices that once ensured survival now anchor a wellness industry worth billions. The temples built to appease dangerous forces have become some of the world's most visited sacred sites. The same dangers that made much of Indonesia unlivable have also made it untouchable, preserving landscapes so pristine they seem almost mythical. In the far reaches of West Papua, Raja Ampat rises from waters so remote that getting there requires multiple flights, boat transfers, and a commitment to isolation that most travellers won't make. That isolation, enforced by geography and violent seas, has preserved something extraordinary, the richest marine biodiversity on Earth. Coral reefs explode in colours that seem computer-generated. Manta rays glide through cleaning stations the size of football fields. Sharks patrol walls that drop into oceanic trenches. The difficulty of reaching Raja Ampat has become its greatest protection, a natural fortress of waves and distance that keeps mass tourism at bay and ecosystems intact. On the remote island of Sumba, isolation has sculpted landscapes that seem borrowed from another planet. Rolling hills cascade in shades of gold and amber across the otherworldly terrain. Waikouri Beach stretches along pristine shores with its turquoise waters and dramatic limestone cliffs. Cascading waterfalls thunder through untouched valleys, carving their way through ancient rock formations. Cyclones, earthquakes, and brutal seasonal droughts have kept modern development at bay, preserving alien beauty in one of Indonesia's most unique corners. In the impenetrable forests of Sumatra and Borneo, where rivers run wild and canopies tower 40 metres high, orangutans have found their ultimate sanctuary. Places like Tanjung Puting and Gunung Loisa remain largely untouched, not by design, but by default. The dense jungle, swampy terrain, and sheer remoteness making large-scale development nearly impossible. Here, visitors can witness rehabilitation centres where young orangutans learn to be wild again. But the real magic happens deeper in the forest, in primary jungles so thick that sunlight barely reaches the ground. These red-haired architects craft fresh sleeping nests each evening with remarkable precision. They navigate aerial highways of branches that would leave humans helplessly stranded below. Their intelligence carries an almost mystical quality, shaped by countless generations of ancient wisdom. The very dangers that deter loggers and developers have become the orangutans' most powerful protectors. East Java's unforgiving terrain has both sculpted and protected one of the world's most spectacular waterfalls. Tumpak Sewu, the Thousand Waterfalls, plunges 120 metres over a horseshoe-shaped cliff in a display that rivals any cascade on Earth. The treacherous descent through slippery volcanic paths, bamboo ladders and unpredictable streams has long deterred casual visitors, preserving this natural cathedral in pristine condition. Indonesia's geological violence has become its greatest conservationist, creating natural preserves more effective than any human protection ever could. But Indonesia hasn't just learned to live with the danger, it's learned to sell it. Where others see destruction, Indonesia saw opportunity. and built an empire on the edge. Mountain roads carved from volcanic ridges have become the ultimate motorcycle adventure. Riders chase hairpin turns that cling to crater edges, where one wrong move means a 1,000-foot drop into emerald lakes below. Forest highways thread between smoking peaks, leading to waterfalls that thunder down cliff faces formed by ancient eruptions. Coastal routes hug precipices where the earth meets the sea in violent collision, each curve revealing landscapes so dramatic they seem designed for adrenaline. What was once impassable has become irresistible. Every dangerous turn now a trophy, every death-defying vista a reason to return. Hidden marine lakes offer an extraordinary swimming experience among millions of jellyfish. These ancient lagoons were cut off from the ocean thousands of years ago. Without predators to defend against, the jellyfish gradually lost their ability to sting. Visitors now float through underwater clouds of translucent creatures that pulse gently like living jewels in the crystal clear water. Paramotoring offers the ultimate aerial adventure. With an engine and propeller strapped to your back, you can fly over landscapes that ground-based tourists can only dream of reaching. Soar above the dramatic limestone arches of Kellingking Beach. Circle the natural infinity pools of Angel's Billabong from angles no photo can capture. From this height, the impossible becomes accessible, and Indonesia's most exclusive views open up to anyone brave enough to strap on wings and take flight. But for the full experience, tourists climb into 4x4 jeeps and drive directly into the heart of Indonesia's geological violence. In the Tengger Caldera, convoys of vehicles navigate the sea of sand, a moonscape of volcanic ash punctuated by smoking craters. This is where our story comes full circle. Where the forces that shaped Indonesia meet the tourists who've come to witness that power firsthand. Every dawn, thousands climb in darkness toward the very craters that forge this impossible country. Mount Bromo's sea of sand, the sulfur-streaked rim of Kawah Ijen, the brooding slopes of Mount Merapi, the sky-reflecting caldera of Mount Batur, or the towering volcanic crown of Rinjani. They follow paths carved by lava flows that we've seen destroy villages, They breathe sulfur fumes from the same vents that have buried civilizations. They cross landscapes of ash where ancient peoples once fled in terror, now retraced by headlamps and hiking boots. Each step takes them deeper into the geological violence that created every story we've witnessed. At the summit, everything converges. Tourists stand on crater rims where magma bubbles just meters below. The same molten rock that built 17,000 islands from nothing. They peer into the Earth's core while gases rise around them like the breath of creation itself. Here, visitors come face to face with the raw, unfiltered power that made Indonesia possible. This is the ultimate transformation. The same forces that shattered Sunderland, buried Borobudur in ash, and unleashed tsunamis across the Indian Ocean are now a magnet. Tourists pay thousands to get close to the very violence that once threatened to wipe Indonesia off the map. What began as chaos has become pilgrimage. Every morning, as another group of adventurers climbs toward active craters, they complete Indonesia's impossible journey. From a land that shouldn't exist to a destination that can't be resisted. They prove that the greatest victory isn't avoiding catastrophe, but learning to find beauty in the heart of destruction. To visit Indonesia is not just to explore its islands, it's to step inside an ancient story still being written by fire, water, and time. And if you think Indonesia defied the impossible, there's a country that went even further. It beat nature at its own game. Click on the screen now to see how Slovenia mastered Mother Nature.